Welcome to my talk, Adventures in Open Source Development, the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. This is the first time ever that I'm giving a keynote in public, so if I'm looking especially nervous, this is the reason. And I certainly never expected to do something like that in my life, in any case. But yeah, so who am I in the first place? We already heard my nickname is Fusel. My actual name that is on my passport is Gina Heuske. The last name is something that gives me a lot of trouble whenever I'm traveling out of Germany, because no one knows how what to do with the A there with the double points and the weird thing that looks like a B but isn't. But you pronounce it like Heuske, that's it. I'm a 43 years old software engineer. I'm also self-identifying as a maker, a boulderer. I also happen to be a PSF fellow and a GitHub star. And most importantly for me personally, I'm 100% nerd. Most importantly for you here, however, is that I'm a full-time open source maintainer on my project Octoprint. Maybe a quick shot of show of hands who is actually aware of what Octoprint is and uses it. Okay, nice. For those who don't know what Octoprint is the snappy web interface for your 3D printer. It's a piece of software that you can install locally on some kind of old laptop, a Raspberry Pi, or whatever else you have lying around that is capable of running Linux and Python. Windows is also supported, but maybe don't do that. It's 100% self-hosted. You fully control what it does. It doesn't phone home unless you let it and stuff like that. It has a plug-in interface that allows you to extend it in very exciting new ways. The community came up with things there that I never envisioned in my life. It's also open source, licensed under the GPL v3. Currently, there are something around 50,000 confirmed users, so I have opt-in anonymous usage tracking built into Octoprint, and around 50,000 users opted into getting tracked. I have no clue how many there are actually, probably something like 10 times that number based on the download numbers. The backend is implemented in Python, the frontend in HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. Somewhat oldish JavaScript libraries, no newfangled stuff like Vue or React yet, but maybe someday we'll get there. In any case, if you want to know more about Octoprint, you can find all about it on octoprint.org. I started this project back in December of 2012, which is a long time ago now, almost 14 years actually. And as you can see on this little timeline that I put up there, since then I've gone through quite the number of releases. Currently, I'm doing a big release roughly once per year with several bug fix releases in between. I've also gone from doing this on the side next to my regular job over to doing it part-time next to my regular job, then doing it full-time through a single sponsor who hired me. And then for 10 years now, I've been doing this full-time through crowdfunding, basically self-employed under German law. As you can see on the little timeline, this project has kept me quite busy over the past 14 years. I had to learn a ton about being a maintainer of a popular project and also about being a maintainer in general. In the process of this, I've seen a lot of good, bad, and sadly also quite ugly things. And today I just want to share some of those with you. And something just made bing. Let's start with the good, maybe, to get all of your hopes up. First of all, I used to be a software consultant with a big consulting company, and I was sent to customers to implement their custom solutions for big software projects, mostly in enterprise Java and such. And back then, it was anything but working with passion on these projects, because they were very dry. They were usually not things that I actually wanted to use myself, and most likely also couldn't use myself due to a lack of money. The good thing about being the maintainer of your own open source project means that you actually are allowed to work with passion. You have your project that you work on, you can make your vision come true. You don't have to face something like politics-driven architecture, which is something that I saw a lot in the corporate environments that I had to work in, where basically one department dictated another department which kind of library stack was supposed to be used because they had the stuff installed already and it needed to be used across multiple departments and such, and so that was not a lot of fun to have the tech stack decided by things like this. You also do not have to work on something you'd never used yourself. I have had to implement some quite horrible bits and pieces during my former life. And with Octoprint, I'm actually still scratching my own itch. Whenever I want to 3D print something, then I fire up my Octoprint instance and I use it for that. And so whenever I break something, I usually notice this quite fast. And so in general, using it myself for me personally is also the best way to make sure that I don't build something that no one wants to use. The show of hands showed me that apparently some people want to use it, so that's good. I seem to have achieved that goal. But working with passion is not the only good thing about being a maintainer. Another thing that is a really huge thing for me is that I'm actively helping people. I help people solve their problems that they have, in my specific case, with their 3D printer workflow. But depending on your project, it might also be something else. I'm able to enable them doing things that they never thought possible before. Which boils down in my case to automation, like automatically slicing stuff, sending it to the printer and getting a mail whenever it's done or something like that. And multiple other things that I've heard over the years, which were frankly quite amazing. And sometimes these people even say thank you, and I can say and tell you from my personal experience that whenever I hear thank you or whenever I get a mail or just a notification on Mastodon or something like that where someone says thank you for your work, that makes my whole week. I have a whole bunch of these printed out now and just pinned to my whiteboard, and I have a little folder on my disk with several more that I got over the years, and whenever shit really hits the fan and my mood goes down a lot, this is where I can go and remind myself of why I'm doing all of that. Usually it works. Then also something that for me really is one of the most important points why I'm actually keep doing this is I'm learning so much. I love learning new things. That is something that I think actually defines my personality since early childhood, that I constantly wanted to know how things work and learn new skills and such. And being an open source maintainer allows you to do that a ton. So it's not just software development. I had to look into how to do project management, how to do community management, because at a certain point your project grows and suddenly there are people there that are actually using it and they want to communicate with you, and they also start communicating with each other, and now you have to figure out how to make them communicate to each other in a nice way and also enforce stuff like code of conducts and such. So that's a whole can of worms that then suddenly gets opened. You also want to provide them with a place where they can communicate, so you don't have to look all over the internet in order to figure out where they are now talking about your project. You rather want to have them on your own forum or something like that, so you can actually find questions when they are asked. You also have to learn about stuff like release management, because it turns out pushing out a new version of your software on a Friday evening is a surefire way to reduce the time that you actually have for yourself on weekends to a really, really tiny bit. So that is something that you quickly learn to avoid. I maybe learned it a bit too slowly in the beginning. You also learn about the value of release candidates in this case, because it turns out that the larger your project gets and the more things or the more situations where it's supposed to run, it targets, the more things there are that you cannot test but that your users can test. So make your users help you test that through release candidates. It turns out getting users to actually run release candidates is also very tricky, so learning how to get them to do that is then also something that you have to do. I'm not sure I have figured this out yet, but I'm getting there. Then things like brand development is also something that you have to work to learn. Not something that I enjoy very much. Also things like marketing a bit and merchandise and things like that. But you need to do that if you want people to know about your project, and you also don't want to anyone to hijack your project. So that is important. Test automation in case of Octoprint. Octoprint usually runs on a Raspberry Pi, so I also have to make sure that whenever I push a new version, a new image is pushed, that also runs on a Raspberry Pi. And so I have to test it on a Raspberry Pi and have to actually automate all of that, because otherwise I spend 5 hours on every release just testing stuff on a Raspberry Pi, which is not a lot of fun. And then, because we are in Germany and I live in Germany, and Germany makes everything complicated, if you are a self-employed open source maintainer in Germany, you also need to learn about all exciting things in the German tech environment and various hats that you then have on your head as well, because you're a private person and you're also a commercial entity, and then you also are a business, and it's very complicated. In this case, I can only say, if you go this route, please get a tax consultant. I can really recommend it. Yeah, and that is only like the first couple of points that came from the top of my head when I thought about all the things that I had to learn when I became a full-time maintainer. There's more and more and more, like infrastructure maintenance and whatnot. So it never gets boring, certainly, and you constantly have to learn new stuff. And last but not least, but also very, very important to me, making new friends. From your community, there is a bunch of people now that I regularly talk to that I also can chat to whenever I find some kind of problem in the code and I just need to play some brain ping pong with. Also through conferences and meetups. And fun fact, I'm here today at my second FrostCon. My first FrostCon was FrostCon 2008, so 18 years ago, where I went in order to participate in the first ever DokuWiki meetup. So we spent the whole weekend in one of these project rooms coding away on the next version of DokuWiki, and I met a bunch of people there that I had so far only ever interacted with online. One of which is my personal friend Andreas Gore, who in the meantime has also visited me a bunch of times now, and I him over the years, maintainer of DokuWiki. We are still in touch, so friendships for life happen here. And last year and this year at PyCon Italia, I met this friendly guy there in the picture. Big shout out to Jacopo Tediosi, who started out with sending very friendly and very productive security reports to Octoprint, and who has since become a regular contributor and a very, very helpful person, and who also lives in Italy. So going to PyCon Italia means being able to meet him in person. So really great. I've also done a bunch of virtual game nights now with other maintainers. Online gaming is fun with people that you meet through work as well. And as always, of course, with making new friends that are also maintainers or maintainer adjacent, basically, shared pain is less pain, because we are now going to talk about the less fun bits about being an open source maintainer and being able to talk with someone who knows about them, experiences them as well, maybe has some personal points of view about them, helps a lot. So let us continue with the bad stuff. By the way, I own this Lego set myself, and I took the pictures myself, and every time I see it on my shelf, I have to laugh. But yeah. So the obvious thing, or the elephant in the room, whenever we talk about open source work, is work-life balance. Usually, it always starts as a kind of side hobby kind of project that you do after work, during your weekends, during your vacation. And a project, as I experienced with Octoprint, can eat your whole. There was a time before I went first part-time at my old job and then also later full-time where I literally spent every 3 minutes working on Octoprint, and friends and family started to complain, why don't you have time, why are you tired all the time, things like that. it's really, really hard to shut off and recharge if you feel responsible for such a project, no matter how big it is, but of obviously the larger, the worse it gets. And you need to be very, very, very protective of your time. Don't make your project rule over your social life. That also is not very healthy, as I can tell you from personal experience. Give yourself time off. Don't spend all your weekends, after hours, and vacation on your project. That's really the most important thing that you can take away from here today, I think. Always know when you need to take a break. Then the other elephant in the room. We all know that open source has a funding problem. We all talk about how open source has a funding problem, but we still haven't solved the funding problem. Personally, I have been now for 10 years asking for donations for Octoprint and also have done some corporate sponsorships. And for reasons that I absolutely do not understand, that has worked. It still surprises me that it works and that I then actually can live from this work and that I rely pretty much, let's say, something like 90 or 95% of my whole income currently is donations. But it works. I cannot tell you how to make it work because I don't know myself why it works, but it works. The problem with asking for donations is, or at least for me, is it's really tricky to ask people to give you money for something that they can get for free even if they don't give you money. And it is really tricky to communicate why it is a good idea to help fund the things that you rely on even if you don't have to. And the first time that I talked about receiving donations for Octoprint with a tax consultant, not the one that I have now, by the way, he looked at me and was like, so they give you money, yes. On their own, yes. For something that they can also have for free, yes. Why? I had to tell him I don't know, but they do, and I now need to know how to treat that from a taxation point of view, but he couldn't help me, and so I have a different one who knows what she does, but yeah. The problem with donations as well is often this approach doesn't scale. For some reason, for me, currently it does scale, but usually, I mean, it's really nice when someone sends you $10, but if only 10 people are sending you $10 a month, then with $100, you will not really go far, yeah, right? We all have rent to pay or whatever else, mortgage or whatever. We all have to put food on our table, so we need a certain amount of money. And then there's also the thing that we all don't get younger, so maybe you also want to be able to put something on the side for later when you no longer can code. And maybe you also here and there want to take a vacation or need a new computer or want to buy a Steam machine or something like that. So it adds up. So yeah, donations rarely scale. Sometimes they do. Just be happy when they do. Partnering with companies for corporate sponsorships, that is also something that turns out to be an even bigger challenge because, for some reason, the way that companies usually work with their internal processes makes it utterly difficult for them to give someone money for something that where they don't actually get something back. So it's more easy for them that you give them an invoice and then they pay you and then everything, you know, like works like it is intended. Donations are not something that are planned there, and sponsorships, like you have put a link on the website and something, that then gives them a chance to maybe get it working with their processes, but it is still tricky to talk them into it. Currently, I have a single corporate sponsor. I'm still surprised I still have them, but okay, because they get a link, but that's all. But yeah, I've always been happy for every single one who went down that route, and it usually were some kind of 3D printing companies. But over the past 5 years or so, that vector has dried up pretty much. In general, my approach here is to make it really easy, and something that I would also recommend if you are in a similar position is make it really, really easy for people to give you tiny but recurring tips. Why recurring? Your rent is recurring. The food that you need to eat is recurring. All your needs are recurring. A one-time donation is great. Don't get me wrong. I'm happy about every single one that I get, but it's not something that I can rely on for next month. So recurring allows you to plan. So if you make it easy for people to give you recurring donations, even if they are smaller than a monthly one-time, like 3,000 people giving me $1 per month helps me a lot, you know? And not only make it easy for them in general, but also make it easy in the way that meet them where they are. Like, don't just go for GitHub sponsors. Don't just go for LiberaPay. Don't just go for Patreon. Go for all of them. Like, take coffee, take whatever else is the donation platform du jour. I think I'm on Patreon, GitHub sponsors, Ko-fi, LiberaPay, DonorBox, and also PayPal. And I get donations on all of these. It's a lot of work on every monthly accounting run. I hate the monthly accounting run, but you can script a lot with CVS exports. But it makes it easy for people to give you money, and that is something that you really want to make it as easy as possible in that case. Another problem that we face these days increasingly often is that platforms also tend to shitify. So when one of these platforms kicks the bucket, at least I still have the others. I don't have all my eggs in one basket, and this is really something that you want to do. And through the past 10 years, I think the majority, as I said right now, the majority is coming through donations. It also has been doing that through the past 10 years of my work on Octoprint. So through all of these platforms, including PayPal, less so by corporate sponsorship and merch. Another thing that I still face, actually, even with a project that has been running as long and as popular as Octoprint, is a certain kind of solitude. People are really, really fast to request features, but really, really slow to help make them a reality. Maybe less slow so these days, but in really, really the wrong ways, and that's on the next slide. But especially at the start, you will most likely do your project alone. And that makes it really, really important to make sure that what you maintain is actually what you want to maintain and what you can maintain. What I mean with this is you really need to beware of having to maintain things that you cannot test yourself or that you simply really do not want to have in your software for whatever reason. Like a feature that you really don't want to use, that you only see a really small amount of people to ever make use of. Having to maintain that for tens of years is not something that you want to have on your plate. And that is finally the reason why Octoprint has a plugin interface. Keynote here, if you have a project that where it makes sense to allow something like a plugin interface, I can really recommend putting one in. Exciting things will happen. It is a bit of a hit to your backwards compatibility management, because now you have to be extra careful about not breaking things, but at least you can now tell someone who wants to merge a really weird but interesting maybe feature into your code base, that's awesome. I cannot maintain this personally, but here's the plugin interface. I would recommend to use this, 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 and this method. Why don't you maintain it? Then I don't have to. With Octoprint specifically, I had feature requests over the years about various very ominous hardware, additional hardware, light sensors, stuff like that, things attached to the Raspberry Pi's GPIO, weird third-party services that were supposed to be called whenever a print finished or something like that. And all of these things are I redirected to the plugin system and said, no, do that, use this. Now I don't have to maintain it. Maybe they don't either, but then at least I'm not to blame that it goes stale. And so it's win-win for everyone. And of course, for users, it also makes it easier to then decide and pick what they want, what kind of features that they want, instead of getting one bloated mess of a thing that does everything and the kitchen sink, but has bugs left and right because the maintenance overhead has grown so big that no one can actually do that anymore. I promised you another slide about this topic because it's 2026, and of course I have to mention GenAI. The past year now, I've been facing an increasing amount of drive-by pull requests that were fully cuffed up by GenAI and were like an utter mess. Also security reports generated by chatbots with very, very creative scoring that usually ended up at ultra critical, hi, oh my god, we are going to die. And also very interesting attack vectors like log in as an admin and then set this setting. Okay. Then we also have this problem in the community where there is now a whole bunch of misinformation often spread by people who are like, oh, I put your question into Claude and then it told me this and that, which is completely wrong too, but okay. And fighting that is really, really tricky. I have to say that this specifically, this whole Gen AI thing has become one of the most frustrating parts of my job as a maintainer. And currently, I would say this is the most likely thing to make me quit. I'm not sure if a single new Octoprint plugin that was requested to be added to the official repository this year was coded by a human, which is really, really sad and makes also the review process. Thankfully, I no longer have to review these, but Jacopo does. And I like the guy. So. It's become really, really frustrating to walk through this mess of code that we get in there. And as I said, this year I think we got something like 10 or 15 requests, and we probably closed all but one, because the quality was so ridiculously low that it was simply the only thing that we could do to protect the community. And so this whole Gen AI stuff really takes the fun out of things. I don't want to talk with chatbots. If I want to talk with a chatbot, I can do that myself. But I don't want to. So I want to collaborate with and help people. I want to actually, when I review a pull request, I want to actually have the other side learn from this review. Because doing a review of code that I did not write myself, that is a lot of mental effort. I have to wrap my head around what I'm seeing there. I have to make sense of it. I have to figure out what was intended by it, and then also figure out if there is a better way to do that. And then I could put this into a feedback. And then hopefully the person on the other end will learn. If, however, the person on the other end will only copy-paste my comment into their chatbot and then puts whatever comes out of that back into the ticket, my time is effectively wasted because, like, I don't get anything out of that. I can do that myself. I don't need them in the loop for it. So I think we can boil this down to I want the human connection. This is basically why I'm in for all of this. And I try to codify this into an AI policy, and this is also what I would recommend to you if you have an open source project yourself. Have some kind of AI policy. Have some page where you tell what kind of contributions that are assisted by, or maybe even if you want to go this route, are fully done by AI, you welcome, and which not. I even put an agent's MD file into Octoprint's code base, which now causes it to get flagged by some of this fancy new slop detector thingies, but thankfully not so strongly that the whole project is marked as slop, in which I tell the agent to please not send pull requests and such. I'm not sure if it works, but it's a try. It's an attempt. I actually stole this from an AI coding project. So, ruling is still out on whether all of this helps. And personally, I just hope that at some point this whole bubble will burst and the stuff will actually become as expensive as it should be, given the energy uses and such. But yeah, we can still hope. And now we come to the really ugly stuff. Entitlement and attacks. I've paraphrased some of the stuff that I got over the years here, and obviously there have been some things there that were even worse than that. But the problem from my personal experience, point of view, whatever you want to call it, is that a lot of users of open source projects forget that there are people on the other end. Okay, it's 2026, maybe there are no people on the other end, but mostly there are still people on the other hand, and they also forget that they are not the only user of the project. I like to call this the NPC syndrome. Like they think everyone else doesn't really exist and it's only them having a problem, and so they should get special treatment. Their priorities might not align with the project, and you might not have time to handle everything right now. And then when they run into some kind of problem and are really, really frustrated, then this can end in comments like that. It probably also doesn't help that plenty of people consider themselves the customer who's always right, which is also very, very annoying. Yeah, long story short, whenever I have to open, whenever I open my mail client up to a comment like this on one of my issues or on a pull request or something like that, or I see something like this on a forum, that ruins the whole week. And what you see there on the right is actually a shot from my office. I got this punching bag in 2019. It's awesome. Like, I don't have to use it as often anymore, thankfully, because I've now also found some other ways to cope. But in the beginning, it really, really helped in progressing all of the anger that something like this caused. And this is also something that I can recommend to anyone who maintains a project. I actually have a whole talk about how to deal with toxic people that I've given at various conferences at this point, which you can also find on YouTube. And also, if you go on my webpage, whoodle.net, I have this linked somewhere under talks. So if you want to learn more on how to cope with this particular bit of being a maintainer, half an hour talk right there. But not now, please, stay here. Then we also have the big problem with bad commercial players. Companies absolutely love using open source software because it doesn't cost a dime, they think. But they don't particularly like contributing back to open source software apart from feature requests. I'm explicitly saying feature requests, not pull requests. If they even admit that they are using open source software in the first place, because oftentimes they are trying to keep this silent. And what I also sadly had to learn when interacting with commercial players was that companies might outright manipulate you or your telemetry for profit. Story time. Now it's getting really, really funny. That was something like, I think, 2020 or 2021. I had a commercial player get in touch with me. They were bundling Octoprint with their 3D printers, and they had they were planning on going into a sponsorship agreement with me. They only had this little question that they first wanted to get solved, and so I went like, okay, it's no problem. By the way, a sponsorship agreement with me looked usually like this. Please clear that with your management about your question. You could try this and this and this. Yeah, thank you very much. Crickets. Couple of months later. Yeah, so we've talked about the sponsorship agreement. There are still some things that we need to clarify. In the meantime, we have a second question. Okay, I said, if there is anything that I can help to get the sponsorship agreement rolling, please don't hesitate to ask additional questions about your problem. You could try this and that. Oh, thank you. Yeah, we get back to you soon. A year or so passed. Then I got a third mail. Yeah, so we have another question. I was like, okay, so I think I want a consulting contract now, because otherwise I will not respond to you anymore. And if you are still interested into the sponsorship agreement, then maybe you should get this done first. I never heard back from them. I think by now they went bankrupt, but I don't think this is related. And then there was also this thing in 2020. don't let me lie, 2024, I think. So I remembered, I mentioned that Octoprint has anonymous usage tracking, right? And it does not only track your running Octoprint, but also which version of Octoprint you're running, on which underlying system, on which OctoPy version, and also what plugins you have installed. And with this information about what plugins you have installed, I had a little top 10 list on the web page with all the most favorite plugins of the community and how many installs they had and so. And then it turned out that two competing companies that made that basically built a business out of an Octoprint plugin that they provided for cloud access decided to manipulate my telemetry with fake instances running from some cloud scripts or something like that in order to become number one on this top 10 list. And more importantly than that, to become on top of the other company. So they started climbing and I noticed nothing for 2 years or 1.5 years or something, at which point I suddenly looked at my telemetry and was like, wait a minute, but this version with Octoprint doesn't actually work with this version of Python, so how can this be? And I started to investigate, and it turned out that between the both of them, they had faked something like 60,000 instances. So that was fun. So I invoiced both of them for the cleanup that I had to do and for the several days of investigation. Confronted both parties, of course. One blamed their own community. They just wanted me to succeed. The other one actually came clear. And yeah, I lost some friendships over this and some sponsorships as well. But at least now my telemetry is clean again. But this is certainly something that I never expected. As a consequence, we've removed the top 10 list, and it's now basically just a randomized list of, I think, the 20 most popular ones. And any commercial plugin is now completely blocked from public stats about it as a consequence. I mean, it sucks for the nice players among the plugin authors there, but that was the only way that I could see to not have something like that happen again. And of course, we also have to talk about burnout. As I said, the temptation is strong to give your everything to your project because it's your project, it's your passion, it's your vision and all of that. And you also help people and you feel responsible and you only need to fix this quick quick bug before bed and such. But it's really unhealthy. It leads to burnout. There's always more to do. You will never be able to finish your to-do list in a project. So don't try. A really, really, really hard lesson for me to learn because I always, like, I have this perfectionism stuff going on, and so it's always tricky to drop the hammer and say, no, not today, but you need to do that. What you really need to tell yourself there always is you don't owe anyone anything, even if you get donations, because the people giving you donations can stop doing so every day. There's no contract there, so right? You don't owe anyone anything. You need to take care of yourself because no one else will. There is no, like at my old job there, I had a boss who then would approach me if I looked especially tired and like, Gina, is everything okay? I no longer have that. I mean, I have a boyfriend who kind of can help there, but it's not his job to do that. So you need to really take care of yourself. You need to learn to say no, also to feature requests, have a plugin system, point people that way, also to release this quickly or something like that. You need to make sure that everything works in a way that is sustainable for you. In my case, personally, over the past years, there have been times where I just needed to take an emergency break. And I'm saying emergency break, not a vacation. Like, I took then off something like one or more often actually 2 weeks when I noticed I got angry more, I could no longer concentrate, I really didn't enjoy the job at all anymore. And I just said, okay, 1 or 2 weeks now, nothing Octoprint related. Just a necessary break to not go down the drain. And I've had people, when I mentioned this on Mastodon or other socials back in the day, to basically like, they basically said something like, I'm envious, I wish I could do that. And I can only tell you, if a maintainer tells you they are taking an emergency break, don't tell them you are envious of that, because the reason for this emergency break is something that you are not envious of. Yeah, but if you can do something like this, do it. Do it for yourself. Would I do it again? All of this. I've given another version of this talk in the past, and back then I always said yes. At this point, I'm honestly not completely sure anymore. The past 13 years now have been quite a lot. I've also turned very gray in this time. It's been plenty of stress, plenty of attacks, plenty of worries about money, about AI, about the future of the project as a whole, with regards to do people actually still use it. And now there's also this slop on top. There have also been quite awesome moments, of course, and currently they are still keeping the balance with everything. I'm also proud of what I consider my life's work, and so that is something that I certainly wouldn't want to give away in any way. And every time that I hear thank you, it makes it worth it. And I still want to say yes today, but maybe one day it will turn into a no. I don't know. We will have to see. That was it. Thank you for your attention. You can find the you can find the slides behind this QR code also on fusel.github.io/froscon2026. You can find me my webpage on fusel.net, and you can find me on Mastodon as at fusel.chaos.social. Some of the pictures that were visible on the slides were by these awesome people there, and Ceterum Censeo Gen AI as a Delendam. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for the great talk. Are there any questions?
Hey, thanks for the talk. Have you considered naming and shaming those two companies for the bad players they are?
I actually have named and shamed them in two blog posts on the Octoprint blog, where I have even an adjusted logo where the octopus is looking quite angrily. So you can look this up there.
Thank you for the great talk. What is your opinion on feature requests in general? Obviously, the example you showed with this entitlement, that's like a no-go, obviously. But if you're talking about a general feature request, what's your opinion of that as a, from a maintainer perspective?
Personally, I focus on implementing feature requests that will help or make the product as a whole better for the majority. If it's something that not everyone actually can make use of, then this is where I would like to rather I implement it as a plugin. That has also happened in the past, but that way I can keep it out of the core. Or I ask the person, or if they cannot do it themselves, I just leave the feature request open as and tag it with a plugin idea tag so that people know that this might be something that they can do. In general, I'm completely open for feature requests. People just have to tell me why they want this in Octoprint. Like if they go like, I want Octoprint to also control my coffee maker, then this is not something that I will put in there. Like, I mean, they can write a plugin to do that if they want to, but yeah. Ah. Ah, yeah. That explains why it wasn't that...
Muted? No, it's not.
Test, test? Yes.
Okay, yeah, when you say I don't want slop, that's okay. But I think over the years, more and more resources are agent-based. So I think there should be also an idea how to do this in the future. What is the future goal to take care with this? Almost all resources will be based on agent stuff.
Personally, I have this in my AI policy that if someone wants to use an agent-based system or a chat interface or whatever to understand where stuff is in Octoprint, if they need help in figuring out which modules live where, what PID does where, does what, they can do that. But if they interact with me, I expect them to interact with me and not their agent. So I also do not want, I have gotten pull requests with this, I do not want documentation that has been generated by an agent, because the agent talks bullshit. They also write in a very, very specific kind of way that at this point I think we are all pretty tired of reading. And so I don't want documentation. And I also don't want code, because from my personal experience, seeing that is generated code looks very, very close to being correct. It's really, really good in faking being the best code you've ever seen. And then you have to spend way more hours than you would have spent writing it yourself to make sure it is actually what it seems to be. So it's just not something that I want. And we don't have to talk about slop security reports, I hope. That is just a nightmare. You get something like a wall of text that is this long, and somewhere in there it's like, log in as an admin. Uh-huh. Where do you get the credentials? Okay. Personally, I just hope this stuff finally becomes so expensive that, like, it is expensive, it's currently subsidized heavily. As soon as we actually have to pay this, pay the amount that we, that it actually costs, we can hopefully learn what it can be used in a sensible way for, without throwing it at everything and seeing where it sticks, and in the meantime killing a whole bunch of people, people's livelihoods in the process.
Yeah. Thanks for the talk, and I would like to ask if you have ever considered getting under the hood of some foundation like Linux Foundation or Eclipse or Apache or whatever there are.
I've thought about it here and there, but so far, frankly, it has been like, that's such a huge amount of red tape. And there is also the thing that I feel like I need to stay in control of what I do there. So that is something where, whenever I have looked into it, and I admit that I have not spent that much time looking into it yet, it always felt like I would have to give away too much control for too little return of stability or something like that, you could call it, maybe. But the last time that I really looked into this was maybe 5 years ago, so at this point I really need to do that again, I guess.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes.
Now you can. Okay. Thanks for the great talk, first off. Very inspiring. I was wondering, considering things like burnout, lots of workload and so forth, maybe that the question to would you do it again is no at some point. Have you thought about something like kind of growing a co-maintainer, somebody you trust that you could take over the project at some point?
I have people who help me that I trust. The problem is... we also all remember the XZ thing, I guess. So that is also something why I'm really, really careful always. And over the past decade plus now, I've also experienced it a lot that the only person who stayed was me, simply because life happened, not because we had any kind of issues or something like that, but just things changed. So. And even then, even if you have 10 maintainers or 20, at some point there might still come a point where you just need to take a break. And right, so, but yeah, getting people you trust and can actually give the keys to the castle is, of course, always also a security kind of problem in the making, possibly. So you always have to find a balance there between trusting and keeping your project safe. So it's tricky.
Any more questions? Okay, then thanks a lot for your talk and have a nice day.